As you know, Rick, when we discuss things, I'm not big on numbers. I'm big on winning. That evening when I spoke to Draymond after the game, I just let him know that that was perhaps one of the five greatest games I've ever witnessed, because he didn't score. And in the end, as a player, you want to have an effect and you want to contribute to the bottom line. And the bottom line is winning. His contribution to winning throughout the entire game was amazing.
Rick Bucher.
You and I have talked a little bit about this. I feel in some ways the triple-double has almost been devalued, and that the quad nickel, which is five or more in four different categories, for you to get a quad nickel, you have to get blocks or steals. You have to have some sort of defensive category in which you are dominating.
This is the BJ Armstrong and Rick Bucher Show, starring BJ and Bucher.
Welcome to the 30th episode of the BJ and Bucher podcast, Four Quarters of Madness. I feel like I've already, this feels like a doubleheader after the conversation that we had coming in. We are just coming off of the All-Star weekend and the big blockbuster that sent DeMarcus Cousins to the New Orleans Pelicans for, I don't know, a bag of socks and a ball rack. I don't know exactly what was coming back the other way. No offense, Buddy Hield. I know. You're the next Jimmer Fredette. No, I mean, you're the next Steph Curry. Sorry, I couldn't. I'm sorry. Anyway, we will get into that trade. We will get into All-Star Weekend. And we have, and this is where things got a little ugly before the show even started. I just asked an innocent question as sort of the driver of the podcast. We have our producer, Shane Freeman. He's the producer. I'm the driver. BJ is BJ Armstrong. But I asked Pharaoh Munch. I said, how do we introduce him? How do I introduce him? And BJ said, oh, just let me spit 16 and I'll take care of that.
But you know what?
And Shane said, don't let him do that. So that's where you find us.
Out of respect to Mr. I'm going to put some respect on this man's name. Okay, people, let me let you understand. This man right here is spectacular. He's miraculous. His vernacular. I could go on and on.
His vernacular spectacular. We got it. I got it. All right.
So, okay. Now let's get to the show, because really we got to get to Mr. Pharaoh Munch today. I'm so fired up, folks. I'm fired up today.
That will be our fourth quarter interview, and it will come to you courtesy of BJ Armstrong. He didn't let the white boy in on this. I don't know why. But he did. But suddenly it was like I got the notice afterward. Oh, by the way, like 2 minutes before the interview. Hey, by the way, we're doing this. Can you do it? My phone wasn't even on. Like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Rick, normally I would say it's all good. But since it's hip-hop, it's all hood. This is all hood today. I'm wearing a hoodie, as you can see. And Rick, right now, let's get to the show, because we got to get to Mr. Munch. Let's get to
first,
the show.
First quarter, let's hit it. DeMarcus Cousins traded to the New Orleans Pelicans. Shocked everybody. Happened. Basically went down. The word leaked out while the NBA All-Star game was taking place.
Yep.
I knew that the Sacramento Kings were waffling on their willingness to commit to DeMarcus Cousins, even though he had said, I want to stay in Sacramento. They were concerned by the number of technicals, by the difficulties, and the team just not winning, that they were going to have to reload and they were going to have to extend him to the tune of $219 million. And so, obviously, they were quietly looking around to see what they could do. I knew that they had approached Orlando. Orlando had balked on making a deal. This was about a month or so ago. But clearly the Kings wanted to make a change. Now, BJ, I'm going to start here, because this is the beauty of having you being an agent. Jaren Akana, DeMarcus Cousins' representation, as this was going down, was saying, we've been assured by the Kings that DeMarcus is not going anywhere.
Right.
And then, lo and behold, he gets moved. So, big picture, when as an agent seeing this play out with another agent and their client with the Sacramento Kings, does any of this, or how does this impact you and your view of that franchise when it comes to your clientele?
Well, as an agent, I'm gonna put my agent hat on here if I can for a second. Whenever a team will assure me of anything, I'm 99.9% sure it's going to be the opposite. That's the first thing.
Okay. When I go to a meeting with the team, and I know Vlade Divac and I know Vlade Divac well, there's nothing that you can assure in this league because every team in this league is looking to improve and that you don't know when that's going to come. So when I read that in the media and social media about we've been assured, we've met with him, I go, wow, I'm pretty sure he's going to get traded because myself being an agent, that's my job is to make sure that I know what's going to happen before it happens.
Sure.
And if you are talking around the league, as I'm talking to these teams and owners in this league, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. DeMarcus Cousins' name was out there months ago. And when teams start asking other agents, what have you heard about him?
Right.
That's a pretty good indication that they're in pretty serious talks with other teams about what's going on. So
right.
I had been hearing his name. I was more shocked at the responses or the response that I was hearing of the reassurance that he was going to be there more than anything.
Huh.
But I was not surprised that he was dealt. I have heard from different sources and different teams that his name was out there.
So here's,
and that he was going to be moved. And it turned out to be true.
Here's the bottom line for me when I look at this. I think this is a colossal mistake by the Sacramento Kings because they are the Sacramento Kings. If you were going to, and it's easy for me to sit in this chair and say, and particularly in hindsight, say this is what they should have done or this is the way I would have done it. But I would like to think that if I was ever a GM, that this is the way I would approach it. Number one, if I have an issue with my belief in building around DeMarcus Cousins long term, as soon as he becomes an all-star, as soon as he hits that echelon of people believe he's arguably the best at his position, I am now trading him. I'm trading him, which would have been a year, maybe a year plus ago. I'm not hanging on. The second part is if I do hang on, then I'm down until forever, especially when I'm Sacramento and I have a guy who I can say is the best player in his position. How many times in Sacramento am I going to have the opportunity to have a player of that caliber? And at his age, my belief is I'm not worried about the money changing him. I'm not worried about the money making it worse or better. I'm waiting for him to grow up or get to the point where we can fully utilize the talent that he has. And when I look into the history, his history with the franchise, I would say there are reasons why he would have acted out previously. The franchise hasn't always come correct, but I'm just going to look at it and say, yeah, things don't look good right now. Yeah, he's getting a lot of technicals. I'm never going to see that kind of talent again in Sacramento while I'm here. So you know what? I'm going to ride or die with the talent.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Shane.
How do you think the thing with him, the whole nightclub thing, how do you think that kind of helped fuel some of this? And if so, then how is this going to affect, you know, the Pelicans moving forward? Because I feel bad for Alvin Gentry because I think he's got some problems coming his way. And do you think he could handle DeMarcus Cousins?
Well, let's first address what Rick, you know, said, and then I'm going to get to Shane's question. Rick, without question, DeMarcus Cousins' talent is a top five talent in this league. He's an MVP caliber talent. Now, the thing about a kid like DeMarcus is we're asking DeMarcus to do something that maybe he's not capable of doing. We're asking him to change a culture and lead a culture and really have an impact on the environment. His talent is A+. The other parts of what's going on, leadership and all those other things, maybe he's not there yet. That's not to say that he won't get there.
But am I asking him to do that? Or do I look at it and say, I'm going to do my best to build an organization around him that provides that?
If there's anything that I would really take a look at is the leadership from the top down. Okay, whenever you have a kid with this type of talent, the first thing you have to do is stabilize the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Stabilize it with your leadership, your general manager. How many general managers have been there? How many coaches?
Head coaches.
Right. How many head coaches have been there?
He's had at least
How many teammates has he had over the last?
Exactly.
Again, because I don't like to put the blame. I'm not going to blame the owner. I'm not going to blame this guy. I'm not going to blame DeMarcus.
Well, you can't. The only person you can blame is the owner because everybody else hasn't been there that long. Everybody else has been part of the shuffle.
When I have a kid with this type of talent, first of all, how are we going to get the best out of the talent if we don't first put this kid in the right environment?
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that I'm really looking forward to see. How is what kind of environment is New Orleans going to have where they're going to allow this young man to grow and develop and become the player that we all think he can become?
And that's what I was talking about. See, you have a lot of empathy for these players because you used to be a player and you represent players. But as a person kind of on the outside looking in, you know, I have empathy for him because I got friends who are like him. But at the same time, B, man, I feel more afraid for Marcus in New Orleans than I do for Marcus in Sacramento. And the reason I say that is because the Big Easy is not like Sacramento, man. It's a totally different environment. It's a worse environment. Yeah. You can get in a lot more trouble in New Orleans than you can in Sacramento.
But I think, Shane, for him, you know, I think he's going to be comfortable down in New Orleans because he's a Southern kid. He's from Alabama.
Yeah.
New Orleans, man.
Yeah, but taking a kid from the South and taking him out West.
Yeah, it's different. It's different. It's definitely different.
It's different.
There's also something about changing franchises too. You get drafted by a franchise and you are the guy, and now you're going in there. And while I think his personality is much bigger than Anthony Davis's is, and I wonder, you know, is Alvin the kind, like, they don't have the infrastructure. The leadership void in New Orleans, I believe, has been part of their problem, why they've underachieved to this point. But all that said, we are going to have plenty of time to talk about where New Orleans is going to go with DeMarcus moving forward. So we have to get to the second quarter. Before we do, I'll just leave you with a little joke that my daughter dropped on me when it comes to DeMarcus Cousins. The first time she heard somebody refer to DeMarcus Cousins, and she went, well, how many are there? All right, going to the second quarter.
You know what? Because of her innocence, I'm going to laugh at that. But because of her innocence,
I'll let Chance know that you gave her a gratuitous laugh.
Hey, Rick,
at her joke.
That wasn't obligatory.
Shane was sincere. BJ's got his Pharaoh Munch cynical hat on right now.
Oh,
yeah, I said it. The white boy said it.
Yeah. Rick.
Yeah.
Now, okay.
All right. Now we're going to
BG 13.
Going to the second quarter. All-Star weekend. We both were there. Both came off of it. BJ got out a little earlier than I did. Got there later. Got out earlier. He's the lucky one when it comes to that. It was all the way around. It was a disappointment. But I want to start with the one reason why I thought maybe Sunday would be intriguing, and I sort of got sucked into the hype, which is Russ Westbrook and Kevin Durant. Last time we saw them was the Warriors, Oklahoma City, in Oklahoma City. They were exchanging words. It was clear that they were not. They had not communicated. They were not. You know, not, they had not had a conversation. Nothing had changed, and so people were really interested to see them both on the West team together. And Steve Kerr, or those two players, basically took all the steam out of all that intrigue right off the bat, very early on. Russ finding KD, making eye contact, finding him, and then KD lobbing it back and Russ finishing it. Everybody was like, oh, everything's good. Oh, peace at last. Peace at last.
Right.
And I guess, you know, when I went back and I was, because how could I not? I saw the tape of them barking at each other in that Warriors game, which is really what lit the fire for everybody. That's what, like, ooh, look at that. Oh, now they're talking. Oh, now we get to see it. This isn't media created. And to a certain extent, I agree with that. I think there was a genuine, I think Russ having KD leave after he met with him, I don't think it was easy for Russ to, like, have dinner. I think he's like Derek, like this, and some other guys, Damian Lillard, some certain guys in the league. They're like, hey, look, I don't want to beg anybody to play with me. I want you to play with me because you want to play. We want to play together. I don't want to have to, like, go out to dinner and, like, tell you how much I like you and like playing with you. Like, that's not in Russ's nature. And yet he did it with KD. And he spent 8 years with KD. And KD lets him know by text message that he's leaving. Like, I would be salty about that, too. That combined with, oh, you think you can win, you have a better chance of winning a championship in Golden State? We had those suckers down 3-1, and but you think it's going to be better or easier over there? All right, go on. You do your thing. And I would, it wouldn't be like I'd be, you know, like unbelievably angry, but I'd like, okay, cool. You go do your thing. I'm going to go do my thing because my number one thing is I want to go win a championship with or without you. So I don't think it was that hot. I think it was just two guys kind of talking a little bit of trash. But I wonder, Kay, when BJ, when you look at where that relationship is now or what we made out of it, how would you define the relationship between KD and Russ right now?
Well, if I can, I'm a step back in time and go to my playing days. As a player, I'm not giving anybody an edge. So I respect what Russell Westbrook is doing right now because mentally, you can't ever, ever give up your edge to another player on your team or on the opposing team. Russell understands that physically, there's a game that's being played, but mentally, there's a game that's being played. Right now, mentally, Russell is trying to really torture Kevin Durant. That's what he's doing. That's old school. That's what the Pistons did. That's what the Celtics did. That's what Magic and all of the players in those eras, that's what you do. You mentally tortured people that didn't have the mental toughness that you have. Mentally, Russell is going after everybody. He does things on the court that people go, that's just Russ. But us guys who are a little from a different era, we understand no one is going to be pushing me in an all-star game. Russell was doing things like going to warm up on the other end of the court because mentally, I understand what he's doing. Now, the camera.
He's a rare breed, though. I think maybe that's why we don't understand Russ, because Russ is so different from the vast majority of players in the league today.
Again, the players understand Russ. The media and the people covering the game don't understand Russ because now we've moved. This is a different game.
Yeah.
At one time, Rick, All-Star Weekend was about basketball, the celebration of basketball. Then it went from basketball to maybe there's a way to grow the game. Remember, just growing the game. Maybe we can just get Spain to come here and cover the game and put it in, broadcast the game in Spanish. And now it's the business. And
right.
The analytics and the technology and drones. Oh, by the way, we got a game going on Sunday night, but don't worry about that. Let's do all the other things before that. So Russell has maintained basketball as his number one priority. And then the first thing people start saying is, oh, well, what's Russell? What is Russell doing?
Right. Relax. What are you doing?
No.
Relax.
Now, unfortunately, for better or for worse, I happen to have played against and played with some of the greatest players and competitors that's played the game. This is what you do if you're a competitor. You look for every edge and advantage you can get. Every advantage, okay? I'll give you an example. When Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen were getting ready for the Dream Team, we're in the summer and we're working out. And Michael always worked at very hard. He was always pushing himself, but he was working at a different pace. And I asked him, what are you doing? It's like, you know, it's the summer. He said, man, I got to make sure when I come back from this Dream Team that everybody on the team knows that I'm the best player in the league. And I thought, who thinks like that? He's working at a pace as if he don't even know if he's going to make the team. And he's preparing himself because he wants everybody to say what he believes he is, the best player in the league. He's not coming out saying, I'm the best player in the league. He wants Rick Bucher to say it.
Right.
Because he want to put that in your mind.
And you know what? And he got Magic to say it. He got Magic and Larry. He got those guys to say it.
I said, well, I asked him, well, how you going to do it? He said, I know we're not going to practice a lot because Chuck Daly said he's not going to practice. But when we do practice, I want to make sure that I dominate the few practices that we do have. And Rick Bucher, you've covered this game for many years. It's legendary status how good those practices were that from the Dream Team.
I've seen everyone some of the film.
Everyone has come away saying the same thing. I just saw David Robinson. You asked Charles Barkley. You asked Magic Johnson. You asked anybody that was there. Chris Mullin, who was the best player there? It was a consensus. Now, those guys might have not been practicing like that. But this man was practicing because he wanted to make sure that everybody in the NBA knew that he was the best player in the NBA. Now, to me, that's genius. So I acknowledge what Russell Westbrook is doing. I acknowledge that the man has the courage to want to be the best player in the NBA.
Yes.
And he's taking the steps to do it because he's mentally going after everybody in the league. He's not there to make friends. Michael Jordan didn't shake nobody's hand. If you want to be the greatest, you can't keep saying, you know, this guy's the best and I'm the best if you're not willing to go and get in the ring with that guy and knock him and knock him off. Give Kobe Bryant credit. Kobe Bryant went after Michael Jordan. I respect that. Russell Westbrook is going after everybody in the league, including Kevin Durant, who happened to be one of his former teammates. I respect that, too. And you got to respect that. Do I think there's anything wrong with their relationship? I don't, because I can assure you this. You got to respect Kevin Durant's game. And I know Russell Westbrook respects his game and vice versa. But now I get what's going on is that, you know what? They're not talking. They're not buddy-buddy. But you know what? I think it's great because it's going to bring out the best in them. So I appreciate it. I respect it.
You know what I appreciate and respect? Shea Freeman, our producer, when he says, pay attention to the clock. And
Shea.
The second quarter is over and it's time for the halftime entertainment.
What are you doing? It's just a halftime.
Yes, this is my favorite part of the game.
All right, guys, this is the Halftime Break on the BJ and Bucher podcast. And today's halftime entertainment is brought to you by Organized Confusion, which features our guest today, Mr. Pharoah Monch. And this song is a hip-hop classic. It's called Stress. Hope you guys enjoy it. Here we go.
Pain, stress, my brain can't even rest. It's hard to maintain the pressure on my chest. Excess frustration strikes. Blood rushes my head when I come across roads with dead mics and whack promoted shows. It's hard, but with the presence of God, I'm true to the game, so I'm back black to take charge and recap. Sure, the time when can never be whack. I'm pure, I insert my lifeline into the track. The energy in me is a poison with no unrevealed remedy. I'm spreading like leprosy throughout the record label, cause mine's put me and my career in jeopardy. Can you come see me in the ghetto where it's dark? Well, it's a real loss. Peeps lurks in the heart. Lord knows it hurts. We kick the hurts to the curb. Execute first things first and put blunted minds to work. My hurt side and my fam support. So I'm high for the time being, singing peace, but taking no short, no short. Stress,
rush, destroy, stress, rush, kill, destroy, stress, stress.
You will now consider me the apocalyptic one. After this rhyme, henceforth, there is none. No more will exist when I emerge from the mist in which I was born into scorn. Most of you can't even comprehend what I am saying to you, even in my human form, the message I'm relaying. Why do you choose to mimic these whack MCs? Why do you choose to listen to R&B? Why must you believe that something is fact just because it's played on the radio 20 times per day? My perception of poetical injection is ejaculation. The immaculate conception. The whole hawker who stalks bodies in Central Park. Soon emergency services are outlined, that body in chalk. Then I begin to walk away and spit. Then when I walk away, I talk. I jogger sprayed my face with mace. She didn't know that I enjoyed the taste of radio activates. When I'm in the backseat of your midtown taxi, don't even ask me for the cash key. The four cabs before didn't pick me up. No, ask yourself who the f*** gonna stick me up.
Rush, kill, destroy, stress. Rush, kill, destroy, stress. Rush, kill, destroy, stress. Rush, kill,
it's time for the second half, the third quarter, and you know what that means. It's time for BJ Armstrong and myself to demonstrate how little trivia knowledge we actually have. We may know the game, but we don't know some of the specifics about
the
game.
You know who's really winning this game?
Shane Freeman.
Shane is winning this game.
Yeah.
All right, let's get it.
All right, here we go. This is record-setting rookies. That's the theme of our trivia challenge today. BJ, as the Milwaukee Bucks' number one pick in the 1969 NBA draft, how many points per game did Kareem Abdul-Jabbar average in his rookie season? Was it 23, 25, 27, or 29?
I'm just gonna say 25.
And that would be incorrect.
Oh, wow.
See, now you know what? I'm not gonna say it. I'm gonna come back to it. The answer is 29. He averaged 29 points a game as a rookie with the Milwaukee Bucks.
This is what threw me off.
What?
Technically, it was Lou Alcindor at the time. But you know what? I'm going to let that slide.
Okay, hey, Shane.
You played in the NBA for how long?
Yeah, no, wait a minute.
Come on. That didn't throw
I thought.
Off,
no, I knew Lou Alcindor averaged 29 points a game his rookie year. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar didn't even exist. You know what?
Come
if you
on,
knew that,
BJ.
That's what you should have said. I would have given you credit.
Let me ask you all this, though. I mean, just think of that.
Here he goes. That now BJ's getting his quiet.
No, seriously.
This is the killer. Here he comes.
Yeah.
Let me just ask you something.
If a rookie today averaged 29 points a game,
oh, man, we'd lose our minds.
We would be going crazy.
Insane.
And you know what? And there's probably a better chance that they would today because of the way the games play.
Man, that's unbelievable. Exactly. Yeah. That's unbelievable. Exactly. All right.
And
here
the
we
fact
go.
That they haven't is incredible.
Yeah, fair.
All right, Shane, I'm with you. I hold the NBA record for having the most three-point field goals in a season by a rookie. Who am I? Allen Iverson, Kerry Kittles, Matt Maloney, Ray Allen.
As a rookie, you know what? I'm going to go outside of the box, and I don't. Matt Maloney was with the Houston Rockets, and he jacked a lot of threes. That was all he did. I'm going to go with Matt Maloney.
That would be incorrect.
Damn it!
It's Kerry Kittles. He had 158 threes as a rookie in the 96-97 season with the New Jersey Nets. If I believe, that was Calipari. That was a Calipari coach.
I believe you are correct.
And you know what, Rick? You were close because Matt Maloney was number three on that list.
Who was two?
Allen Iverson was number two.
You know what? I knew Allen was up there, and I thought that might be a trick question, but I really thought it was a tricky, tricky question. And I'm sticking up for the white boy in today's trivia challenge. Since we wouldn't,
What is this? What is this?
What? Okay. I'm sensitive, man. I'm sensitive. I don't believe in racism.
Rick, when Pharaoh Munch comes to town, you and I going for sure.
Sweet. I'm there.
And all I'm saying is we gonna put this picture on Instagram and tweet it with our hats turned
back. Yeah. Like you said, I'm with you when you're right.
Whoa! I'm with you when you're right. Let's go, right, man.
I hold the NBA record for the most assists in a season by a rookie. Who am I? Isaiah Thomas, Tim Hardaway, Mark Action Jackson, or Oscar Robertson?
I'm going to say Action.
And that would be correct. Mark Jackson logged 868 assists in his rookie season with the 87-88 Knicks.
Yeah, I remember that because he was playing with, what's the guy? He's the coach now, Rick Pitino. And I remember they was playing that style. They was getting up and down. I remember that. Okay.
A lot of assists, man.
All right, here we go. I am the NBA leader for the most blocked shots by a rookie. Who am I? David Robertson, Manute Bol, Shaquille O'Neal, or Ralph Sampson? I just saw Ralph Sampson this weekend. Great guy.
I just saw David Robinson this weekend, and I'm going to say David Robinson.
You are wrong. That means
you are the winner. Can you give it? Who was it?
It was Manute Bol.
Was it really?
He blocked 397 shots. I believe one of those shots were mine. You know, when you guys are laughing, Rick, and Rick knows this, whenever you said Manute Bol, you just begin to laugh.
Oh, no doubt. He was a funny dude, too.
Funny,
what a character.
Oh, what a character.
Yes.
Oh,
was he really?
Shane, when I tell you one of the great spirits I've been around, he was funny beyond funny. I mean,
that dude talking trash, man. You couldn't. It was kind of like who it was coming out of.
Like, I know.
You couldn't believe.
Who was that he had a fight with? And he was like, I can't remember the quote, but it was something like, "I'm not afraid of him. Like, I'm used to fighting lions or something." He said.
Oh man,
this is.
Yeah, I killed lions with a spear.
Yeah, exactly.
You think I'm gonna be worried about this cat?
Yeah, it was. Oh, this is great.
All right. So once again, BJ Armstrong, the winner. You get one right in this show in the third quarter, and you're going home with the hardware.
Rick, just for the show, because of our guests.
Yes.
I want you to refer to me as
Had to.
Nah, had to?
Had to. I didn't release this to my man, Farrell, because I was like, I didn't want to disrespect the game. But my MC name, my rap name is Had To. You know? And when you see
Shane,
Had To,
Shane,
then you
Shane,
know what
BJ's
it is.
Got a
you know?
Rap name.
Yeah, yeah. You know?
It could have been, but it could have been Tweedledee, and it would have been fun.
No, Shane.
BJ has a rap name.
Shane.
Oh,
what?
No. I'm just saying, you know. Hey,
I'd had to.
Shane, if you were to lay a beat right now, so, I would just let it yeah. go off the top. But Shane didn't lay a beat, so you know what I mean.
Rick,
fortunately,
Rick is calling you Had To now.
Yeah. Fortunately,
Shane,
we don't have to hear BJ rap. Excuse me, not BJ. We're going to hear Had To.
Oh.
Now have a conversation with Farrell Monch about what he would do if he were the Knicks owner and his thoughts on Charles Oakley, the Madison Square Garden incident, and many more things. Here it comes. Had To with Farrell Monch.
Welcome back to the BJ and Bucher podcast here. Today we have a very, very special guest. We have to stand up and let's give this man his proper his proper introduction. Mr. Okay, put some respect on that. Mr. Farrell Monch. The man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Monch. Welcome to the show again. Thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it, man. It's an honor, man. It's an honor to do this, you know?
Well, let's get right into it. First of all, we know you for your music, and we know everything you're doing there artistically, but we see that you're a big, big, especially New York fan. How did this happen?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, like, in a lot of terms, it starts with your parents. My parents are both big, you know, basketball fans, baseball, football fans. My father grew up a Knicks fan. I grew up because I can remember watching Walt Frazier, and that's all I would hear is Walt Frazier. So I kind of was like brought into the whole format of the whole Knicks thing from the beginning, and you know, just hearing about their championship seasons back then. Unfortunately, we haven't won since back then. And I had to bring that up, you know, because you were a thorn in our side as well. So, you know, but yeah, man, New York all the way, Mets, Knicks, Giants. And I think sports and hip hop is synonymous in that we pull inspiration from it. It's what you can go to as a relief from music. And, you know, it's inspiring as well, especially basketball and hip hop, you know.
Well, since we're talking about hip-hop and basketball, let's talk about your Knicks. There's a lot going on with your Knicks right now. Let's say Mr. Farrell Monch was the GM of the Knicks. What would be your first line of business that you're going to attend to? Let's go for it, Farrell. What would you do first and foremost, everything that's going around with the Knicks right now?
First of all, I would straighten out the situation with Oakley because I think that was an embarrassment. An unfortunate situation. But an embarrassment because, you know, it's about culture and that whole situation. It just, for me, it wards off free agents and people even wanting to come here to start the culture off right. So I still think we're in a lack of the team having an identity, which I think you need to set the standard for. And that starts from the top, from the owner to the GM, to the coach, to the players. And I just still think we're lacking that. I think we got a good cast of players this year. I think it's still a mix-up about how to play. Do we play through Melo? Do we play through Rose at the point? Do we bring along Porzingis? And it's just confusing to watch at times a team that has an array of talent not in games properly. So I would instill what my culture would be. And if you play for me or play for this franchise, you would automatically know, hey, if I'm going to the Knicks, I know I got to be defensive-minded, defense-oriented. I got to get back on D, and this is how we're going to play. Or whatever, you know, the culture would be or the ideology would be, it still hasn't been set with me in the Knicks, in my opinion.
Who's some of your favorite coaches and teams that you've seen over the years?
Got to always respect the Spurs and Pop and the attention they play to both sides of the the court and sharing the ball. And as the game is going along now and getting away from big men, I think you got to pass the ball. You got to share the ball. And I think that's what makes Golden State enjoyable to watch and Cleveland enjoyable to watch. And the elite teams are really sharing the ball. And, you know, just with the Knicks, they say Anthony's a ball stopper, but I just don't think he's had the supporting cast yet to get rid of the ball. You know, when you watch Carmelo with the Olympic teams and he's surrounded by talent, he's an excellent passer. But with the people they've surrounded him with since he's been there so far, especially fourth quarter, you know, a lot of time the ball stops with him. And I understand why that's frustrating, but he's the best player. But to answer your question, I like Pop. I like what they're doing in Golden State. I like what they're doing in Houston right now. You know,
right.
It's just enjoyable to watch. Yeah.
So you like guys who getting up and down. You like that style. You getting up and down, a little chaos out there on the floor. Golden State, the Rockets, stuff like that.
Exactly. And then, you know, after years of watching basketball, you realize when you do make it to the playoffs, the game slows down a bit and you do have to play defense and you do have to rebound. So it can't be all run and gun. You know, you have to pay attention to that to go past the first round. You have to pay attention to detail. And that's what these elite teams have. You see, they're gearing up for the playoffs because the game slows down at that point.
You a man who knows your history. You know, you said Clyde Frazier. Give me your top five basketball players of all time.
I would say this is a little difficult, but I'm going to go in no specific order. I'm going to go Jordan, Magic, Bernard King.
Hey, Say Bernard was a bad boy. I took a 55 one night with him, Pharaoh, so I can't argue with you. Hey,
that's some New York right there. I know I'm dissing the old school right now. I'm going to throw LeBron in there, and I'm going to throw Kobe in there. That's like totally new school with the exception.
Yeah. Well, it's one thing we know Pharaoh was like. He liked to put that ball in the basket because based on his five, he going to be able to score that ball. But, hey, man, I want to appreciate you for coming on. Bro, you always, you know, always a friend of the show. Appreciate it. And I'm serious. I want you to definitely come to the game. Be my guest at the game. I love to go to the finals with you and just kind of hang out. And again, thank you, bro, so much for coming on, and much respect to your art and what you're doing. And we huge fans here, so much love, much respect. Again, thank you for coming on the show.
Awesome, man. I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed Pharaoh and had to. Hope you enjoyed the entire podcast. We'll be coming back to you again next week. By the way, if you're listening on iTunes, be sure to subscribe to the show. You can also rate and leave a review. We love hearing from you, what you think we're doing well and what we could do better. You can also check out our new website, bjandbuecher.com. Has all the stuff, all the podcasts, along with other material, written material on things going on around the league. And you can always follow us, obviously, on Twitter @BJ and Bucher. Thanks for listening, and we will talk at you again next week.